That's the worst thing. It's like, go in, have a deck ready, present the deck, walk the person through it, control the conversation. This is a pitch. This is the, oh, let's just have a conversation is like, yeah, terrible. Never do that. Horrible.
If you have an opportunity to tell your story exactly how you want to, why wouldn't you take it?
I think it comes from this like humility thing. People feel like it's like being humble or whatever. And it's like, no, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. Terrible idea.
Welcome to the Product Market Fit Show, brought to you by Mistral, a seed stage firm based in Canada. I'm Pablo. I'm a founder turned VC. My goal is to help early stage founders like you find product market fit. Lee, welcome to the show. Second time around.
Second time. I'm happy to be back. I'm a veteran now.
Yeah, we'll see if you improved or got way worse. I don't know. You know, it's like the second date. Like, you don't know. You've already said everything and there's actually nothing left to say anymore.
Yeah. Usually worse. I never have a good second showing.
So look, you know, I was looking at the data that Crunchbase came out with, like, you know, kind of the January 2024 data, and it's not pretty out there. Just some highlights. I'm looking at this chart that obviously all of you can't see, but bottom line, you know, if you look at angel and seed funding by month, January 2022, so 2 years ago, about $4.5 billion raised globally just in angel and seed. That was down to like 2.5 billion last January and down to about 2.1 billion this January. So we're on this beautiful.
So still going in the wrong direction.
That's right. On this beautiful, we're on this beautiful downwards trend. The nice thing is it is like the decrease is slowing. The rate of churn is slowing, right? But no, it's not pretty out there. And so figured it makes sense to do like a fundraising episode because at the end of the day, regardless of the macro, people do have to raise. And I will say this, like, as much as it's not pretty, there's still $2 billion that are raised at Seed and Angel. So people are raising money, right? And so that's what we'll be doing today.
How different do you think this process is now, given that there probably isn't that much FOMO for VCs? Like, angels definitely like almost zero because there's no rules on them for when they have to deploy capital. For you guys, like, there's structure to when you have to deploy capital. There's rules to your fund.
No, I think it's, I mean, for sure, the FOMO is gone. Like, it's way worse. And I think everything's just going to, like, the rounds are smaller. The rounds take longer. There's just like less appetite for risk. Those are realities. But at the end of the day, like, whatever the macro, you want to put every single thing in your pocket and like dial up your odds as much as you can, right? And these little things matter. Dude, like, one other thing we did when we were raising a gym track, and this was for sure not premeditated. It was totally by happenstance, but it was awesome.
I don't think anything I've ever done in my life is premeditated.
That's legit. That's legit. But I don't know if you remember, we raised, like, it's almost these concentric circles when I look back, right? Like, we started with people that knew us super well, right? So like literally friends and family, like friends and family, right? Like parents, like whatever, right? And we raised like very like 50K, right? And by the way, we actually thought at the time we only needed like $100,000. So we told them we just need $100,000. We believe that, right? And
was that true? Really? I don't remember that. That's crazy. Okay.
Dude, I remember maybe it wasn't 100, it was 200, but I remember writing it on that whiteboard that we took, you know, on top of the car, or like 200K. Like with 200K, we could do everything, dude. Like it was infinite amount of money. The thing is, when you have, I think especially true for angels, it's harder for VCs because VCs will want you to like say, this is how much I'm raising and like more or less commit to that. Maybe you'll describe it a little bit. But with angels, you can be like, okay, I actually think 250K gets me to a certain milestone, right? And I think this is very true for first-time founders especially. You need that threshold of what you're raising to be like feel achievable. Like you're pitching someone for 25K and you want $1 million. They're like, okay, call me when you're like at 800,000 and I'll let you know. Like I'm not going to move the needle. But if you're raising 250K, all of a sudden they're 10% of that. Like you're just way closer by definition. And we did that. You know what I mean?
And that's like this kind of like smart structuring thing that you can do that. I guess you're right. At the time, we had no idea that we were doing it, but it's like, and I mean, it's kind of why there's like like friends and family round, pre-seed, seed, right? Like you can use that terminology to chunk up around where you're like, look, to get to internally as a founder, like I want to get to $1 million in ARR. What I need to get there is $1 million of capital into the business, but I'm going to chunk it up into a 250K raise, a 500K raise, and $1 million raise.
But it's what happened. We went from 200 to like 500 to 750. I'll tell you something though. We were talking about how to drive FOMO in this in this market. I'll tell you one story of just, I just consider this like a very, it might seem like small, but I just found it was such a power move that somehow never seen before. So look, normally when I do these pitch meetings, like somebody's raising ground, one of my final questions is just like, okay, and like, where are you at in this fundraise, right? And I'm just trying to like, obviously just get as much information as possible. And so some of the classic answers are like, oh, well, actually, I just started this fundraise like last week. You know, one of the first meetings. I'm like, okay, cool.
Which is never true, probably. They've probably been doing it for like 2 months.
Maybe it's better than the alternative, but the reality for me is all I know is, okay, cool. I've got a lot of time. I got time. There's no FOMO because you're just starting. So either you're lying to me and it's actually been 2 months and I have even more time or you're either way, right? The other one is like, they actually know, say, okay, no, like it's been 4 weeks. Like they're pretty honest about it, which is like kind of the worst part. Cause like, that's what you said. Marginally better, which I've heard often, is like, oh yeah, we started 3 weeks ago. Like we actually have like five investors in the day room and we expect like two term sheets by next week, which is like, okay, but it's a bunch of nothingness, right? Like I have no idea. Like, you know, it means absolutely nothing. It
means nothing. Yeah.
Cause like, who knows if it's real or not. Right. And then this one guy comes and he pitches me and I say to him, you know, okay, cool. Where are you at in this fundraise? And he's like, well, like actually I already have a term sheet. And I'm like, well, then what are you doing? Like, why are you raising? He's like, well, it's actually like, it's a term sheet for my existing investors. And like, they're willing to lead it. Like they'll do whatever. It's a $3 million round. Like they'll put in $2 million at these terms. He's like, but like, you know, I also know the value of like working with many different VCs and getting access to a bunch of different networks. So I thought like I'd go out and talk to some select investors that like I think could be really helpful and just like see what's out there.
Dude, I want to invest in this guy's company. I don't even know what it is.
Just awesome. That's a power move. First of all, it could be a complete lie. And I'm sure like, you know, because this is another power move, is like telling me that like you want to work with me specifically, even though like you don't even know my name, but like, that's great. that works.
I love how honest you are about the like people like kissing your ass.
It works. It just works, right? It's like, oh, it's only select VCs. And then I get to go back to my team, be like, guys, it's only select VCs, you know, like just this telephone game you let me play. But in this case, like I have no way to validate this. Like I can't, I mean, if I called their investor and said, are you really gonna leak this? I'm sure they'll say they will. Like, and maybe they will, and maybe they won't, and I have no idea. All I know is by definition, this round is 100% happening and I'm either part of it or not, right? Like, and so.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good way of putting it, is it's happening or not. It's exactly, happening exactly. Regardless or not if I'm on the bus.
This ship is sailing. Such a power move.
Yeah. That's such a good framework. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And that's actually maybe the framework for all people who want to raise, right? Is that you're trying to build the story of like, this company is raising money regardless of you or not.
100%.
You can choose to come in or not. It's you writing a check or not is not the deciding factor on this thing is going to happen or not.
I think that's totally true. Even if you go back to like kind of these concentric circles or like bigger and bigger rounds, it's like, that's what's happening. It's like when the rounds are almost filled, you're like, well, this is happening no matter if I join or if I don't join. That's exactly what's happening in this case. Like this round is getting done now. That's not going to, like, if I'm not interested in the company or whatever, like that's not going to make me just invest. But if I'm already interested, that can definitely get me to drop other things, put this one to the top of the pile and figure out whether I'm going to invest or not, because there's no time, it's happened. You know what I mean? Like all this, that's the momentum you want
to
build.
And like to take it up to like a macro high level, which is where this conversation started, where you're talking about the reduction in the amount of capital that's flowing. This idea of this company is raising money regardless of you come in or not. When there's tons of free-flowing money, that's in the back of everyone's mind, right? Is that this company is going to raise money regardless. What has happened now is because there's less capital to build that story of, oh man, regardless if I write a check or not, this company is going to go raise. That's now the challenge for founders, right? You don't have this extrinsic thing of like, oh yeah, I'm going to go have 10 VC meetings and one of them is going to write a check. It's like in VCs' minds or investors' minds, these guys are going to go have 10 meetings and no one's going to write a check, right?
Anybody can do this as long as you have, like, this can't be your first round, but like if you have us as a VC and you're raising the next round, or anybody as an investor and you're raising the next round, like that's a pretty easy ask to your investors. Hey, like, can you help me drive FOMO by just like, you know, kind of saying that, you know, and maybe it's not even that much of a lie. Cause by the way, if you don't raise, you will probably back me anyways, like unless you really don't like me. So I think that's just something everybody can use.
What about first-time founders? How do first-time founders build that? like, you know, build that we're going to go raise regardless of you. I mean, for us at GymTrack, as first time founders, for sure was 500 startups, like getting into an accelerator. That for us was for sure the like impetus or the driving factor behind it. What else have you seen from like first time founders?
I think it's that, right? Like it's back to that framework. Like you have to have enough like built like in terms of relationships that you can actually like make that credible. And I think like as one of the tips, I think like first time founders, like getting into an accelerator, it like if obviously if you can go to YC, YC, if you can go to 500, 500, if you can't go to Textures, like, but basically going down the list, yeah. Like,
Were you just ranking all the accelerators in your list? You were doing
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's for, if you have an idea, like Antler's obviously a good one. If you don't have an idea, there's a bunch of others that are pretty good if you don't have an idea. And then there's the ones where you actually have an idea. And at the end of the day, it's like a badge, right? It's like, if you go to Harvard, you have that Harvard badge, like people just take you more seriously. You go to YC, like that just happens. And I've seen time and time again, like these companies get into YC and all of a sudden, like their price went up by 2x and like, it's just so much easier for them to raise. It's a real thing. So that's another way but you have to find a way to build this army of relationships. I think as a first time founder, like, you know, I don't know what else you could actually realistically do to drive FOMO.
Besides build an actual business, you know, I think
All right, that part.
At the core of it is like, you know, that's the part that, and I think that's like a trap that a lot of first-time founders fall into is like fundraising is so foreign to people and it's so challenging and it's its own beast to take on. But like you said at the beginning, it's the 10%. It's the cream on the top, right? It's the everything else underneath is like the important part.
So let me tell you another one. And this one, because we were just talking about YC. So YC obviously is like the poster child when it comes to like just seed stage in general, but like also setting standards, right? And so what happened with YC is, and I don't know if you know this, but I think I'm sure a lot of founders haven't realized this. YC started off, they made the safe popular, right? Like before YC, there was no thing. And the original safe was a pre-money safe. Like that was actually the original instrument that YC put out. They realized that pre-money safes are actually terrible for investors because bottom line is you get diluted by other safes and there's nothing you can do to stop a founder to just keep continuously raise safes on safes. So at some point they flipped it and they went to a post-money safe. And because it's YC, no founders ask questions. And if YC says post-money saves is the standard, well, then post-money saves are the standard. And not only are they the standard, they must be great for founders. Like, this is the assumption. Like, if you're doing a post-money save, you're a cool VC, right? Let me tell you something. There's nothing more dilutive for a founder than a post-money save. And I love post-money saves. I should be saying this. I really should be saying this because I will turn every pref round to a post-money save as I can. Post-money saves basically have, and I'll walk you through an example, but like, they basically have baked in anti-dilutive rights. Like without having to fight for any of this stuff, you can't get diluted by safes. You can't get diluted by ESOPs. You can't get diluted by anything until the safe converts. It's incredible. And so I'll walk you through an example because I've seen this. I've seen founders effectively stack post-money safes on post-money safes. And the impact is huge. And they don't realize it. Like they just literally don't realize it. So let me walk you through two, right? Like one of them is, and we'll make it super simple, right? So imagine you start off solo founder, you own 100% of a company, right? You go and you raise 1 on 5 million as a post-money safe. Okay, so you sold 20% of your business, right? Then you go and you add a 10% ESOP because you need to hire people, so you put 10% in an option pool. Cool. Then time goes by, you need more money, and you go and you raise another post-money safe. This time, you know, things have gotten better, so you raise like 2 on 10, right? You sell another 20%. Because these are post-money safes, the first investor didn't get diluted by that option pool, didn't get diluted by that second investor. So if you actually look at your ownership, you've given 10% to the option pool, 20% to pre-seed investor, 20% to seed investor, that's 50%, and you now own 50%. That's how much you've gone diluted, right? Now imagine you did this exact same fundraise cycle, but you just did it on pref rounds. Like that's the only difference, right? And so you said, okay, you start off, you raise 1 on 5 on a pref round, you give 20%. When you add that 10% ESOP at some point, that dilutes that first investor too. So you don't take 100% of the hit. Then you go and later on you raise 2 on 10 and that dilutes the ESOP and dilutes the first investor, not just you. When it's all said and done, instead of 50%, you have 58%. Like you just got 8 more percentage points for free because it's not like you change the terms, you have to negotiate, you have to raise less money, none of that stuff. Literally for free, you got 8% more points. And this is only two stack saves. So when you do three or four of these saves, you get destroyed. And the craziest thing is, if I were to fight for anti-dilutive rights on a term sheet, people would tell me I'm a shark, right? But if I offer them a post-money save, they think I'm the coolest VC in the world. So like, like I don't know how YC made this happen, but it's incredible. It is not good for founders.
So what are founders supposed to do though? Because that seems to be the flavor du jour. Like, you know, regardless of what you do, I think most people will point back to, well, this is what a YC is doing, so why isn't it what you're doing?
I'll say this, like if you're, I think it's simple. Like if you're raising from angels, do a pre-money save. And I don't think like the 90% angels will fight you on the difference, right? And then if you're raising from VCs, I don't know any VC that isn't happy doing a pref round, like a price round. Almost most VCs are happy to just do a price round. Do a price round. By the way, like most times we don't do a price round because the founder is the one that's like, oh, price round's more complicated. Like we'd rather just do a safe. I'm like, great.
That is, for the most part, founders are just like, they're not finance people.
For sure they're not. No, of course.
They're just confused and they've heard other people say, oh yeah, I'd rather just do a safe. It's easier that way.
100%. And before, pre-money safes actually were super advantageous to founders. They were great.
It made sense.
Things have flipped, man. So like, anyways, that's just my two cents is like, if you're a founder, opt for a pre-money save if you can, or a pref round. It's funny, man. I like half regret because I'm telling you, I was talking with my partners the other, like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, guys, like we should only do post-money saves. Like we're so dumb for doing anything other than post-money saves. It's insane.
But I think that like sharky, and look, like I'm not saying you guys are sharky or VCs are sharky in general, but like that sharky term world has come back.
So let me, maybe like to end, I've got like a few quick fire, like mistakes and tips. Maybe I'll list some of those and just get your reaction on them. Do you think they're legit, not legit, or whatever? Classic mistake number one. And it's like truly just fully avoidable mistake. I don't even know why people do it. But anyways, just saying too much. So for example, and I always ask, but like I would say 70% of founders know better and 30% still don't. Saying too much. So like, how much are you raising? 3 million. Okay, cool. What terms?
Let the VC come up with the price. See if it matches yours. Why would you put the line in the sand first?
Exactly. Like either the price is too low, in which case I just, you know, you got a worse offer for me. The price is too high and I'm like, oh, I'm not interested anymore. Yeah, none of those things are going to help you. Mistake number two, actually, I'm curious what you think about this one. And this again is in the context, I don't think this applies to angels, but just in the context of VCs. Not being ready to pitch, like to truly pitch a story. Kind of founders sometimes get on, this happens maybe 25% of the time. It's like, okay, cool, da da da. And then I'm like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Like, do you want to have a conversation or do you have like a deck you want to go through? And they're like, oh, let's just have a conversation.
Terrible. Terrible.
Worst.
Oh, the worst. That's the worst. The worst thing. It's like, go in, have a deck ready, present the deck, walk the person through it, control the conversation. This is a pitch. This is the, oh, let's just have a conversation is like, yeah, terrible. Never do that. Horrible.
If you have an opportunity to tell your story exactly how you want to, why wouldn't you take it?
I think it comes from this like humility thing. People feel like it's like being humble or whatever. And it's like, no, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. Terrible idea.
Mistake number three, setting timelines, right? So founders will come in and be like, yeah, so I'm raising a round and we're going to close in 4 weeks.
Yeah, terrible idea.
They're awful, right? But they're real. Like, they're real. I'm not making these up.
They're awful, but they're real. And so many people do them. So many people do them, which is this like, yeah, we're closing on this date. No, no, no. It's like, do you even have a term sheet yet? Like, do you even have a lead? Like, no, you're not going to close on this date. And oh, by the way, even if you do have a lead, you're probably not going to close on that date because things are going to take longer than you think. Just like, don't put lines in the sand. It makes you look stupid.
It makes you look, because at the end of the day, it's like, from my perspective, hearing that, I'm like, you're not in control of that. So like, I don't believe that you're going to raise in 4 weeks. And then when you don't raise in 4 weeks and you're still raising, you lost all credibility. So it's just a lose-lose.
Yeah, 100%. Huge mistake. Never put a date on it. Unless there actually is a close date. In which case, cool. But
yeah, of course. And that means you have a lead and all these sort of things. And that's like a real thing. Yes, exactly. Okay. Final mistake. This is a tougher one, which is like the false start, but I have seen this happen many times. Company wants to raise a seed, wants to raise an A, isn't really there. And they could probably figure it out with a handful of conversations, but they decide to press the gas on it. They have like 50 conversations, end up with nothing. And the problem is, and I don't think many founders realize this, you burn those leads. You burn them.
I think huge mistake. You're better off waiting until you're ready 100% of the time. I agree. Like, and this is maybe a bad analogy, but it's like in the beginning of the call, you said, it's like, are we going to do better on this one than we did the first one? Is the second date going to be better than the first? It's like, if you have a bad first date, there's a bad first showing, like, oh, it's so hard to come back from that. Right. And so I think you're so much better off waiting. If you can. I mean, the reality is some people can't wait. They got to go, but you're going to probably get worse terms. You got
to
be okay.
Yeah. Well, like that, you know, oftentimes it's like, I want to raise an A, you're not there. Maybe you need to raise a bridge round, right? I want to raise a C, you're not there. Maybe you need to raise a bridge round, right? But my point is like, the thing is, what I think oftentimes founders that haven't gone through the process don't realize is the first time you get an intro to an investor or you reach out to an investor, what you have on your side is innate curiosity. From the investor's perspective, it's like, here's a company I don't know of. I haven't met them. Unless I'm sure I'm not going to invest, maybe I should at least take a 30-minute meeting and see what they're about. And especially true if you get a warm intro. You meet that company and you pass. Now you just lost that, right?
And the other thing too, I would say, and this is a mistake I've made before, is you get these intros to VCs with really big names. You're not ready to go meet with that fund, but you're like excited by the name of the fund. And walking into the meeting, you're like, why am I doing this? I'm not ready. I know they're going to ask questions that are not good, that I'm not going to have good answers for. And you should be very intellectually honest with yourself about if you should be going into that room or not. And I think people don't do that enough because they get excited about the brand name.
Boom. So those are the mistakes. Okay. Here's a handful of tips. Tip number one, founder intros are the best intros. Agree or disagree?
Disagree. I don't know if they're the best intros. I think founder intros are the best intros if the founder who's introing you has had an exit for that fund and now they're also like an angel investor or something like that. I think if the founder is like a current founder in the fund, you don't know what the relationship is with that fund or not. I would say actually my favorite intros to funds are LPs.
LPs. LPs. That's a good one. But harder to find, no?
Yo, for sure, harder to find. Yeah, I don't even know if you're an LP or not, but a lot of angel investors are LPs, and a lot of like founders who have had exits are LPs. I actually think that's the better intro than founders.
I think that's true when you can get it. I guess my point is, as a founder thinking of raising, one thing that I don't think is tapped enough is like, it's pretty easy to get another founder who's like a notch above you to give you 30 minutes like for true advice. And that founder guarantees knows some VCs. Do you know what I mean? So I find that that's like an untapped, not as, could be more tapped. I mean, people use it, but.
I think it's good. It's better than asking like another VC for an intro to a VC fund. Don't do that.
Yes.
Ask Pablo for an intro to another Canadian VC fund. They're going to be like, well, Pablo's not investing. Like, what? Why is he just.
That's a tough one, man. I get that often. Like, you know, pass and it's like, okay, like, do you know any other VCs you should talk
to? No. The opposite. If I came to you and I asked you to invest in my business and you pass, I'd be like, don't ever tell anyone. Don't ever intro me to a VC. Don't ever tell a VC that you and I talk. You don't even know me, bro. You don't even know who I am.
Okay, here's a tip. And I think you're going to hate it because it's so cliche. But there's some reality to it. And I just want to get your reaction. Raising from a position of strength. What's your initial reaction when you hear that?
I think it's bullshit. What business is ever in a position of strength? Like you never are. There's always skeletons in the closet. There's always like, you know, storytelling and whatever and all this stuff going on. Like no company is in a position of power ever. If you were in a position of power, like you probably wouldn't need to fundraise. That's the reality. Like, and I don't know. I don't really like it. The reality is like, I think you should raise from a position of having a good story, heading in the right direction. But this idea of position of power is like crazy.
I'll tell you where I think it can apply, but it's for privileged situations, but because you have to be getting inbound to even fall into this. But I have seen this. Okay. I've seen it, and I've seen it as a difference, especially between first time founders who I think haven't gone through enough cycles to know how hard fundraising could be. Versus multi-time founders who know that they're not really in control of things. And so I've had situations where I go out to a founder and I've seen them receive these from others, right? And they don't need to fundraise. Like they've maybe just raised in the last few months, right? But then they have some inbound interest. And I have seen a difference where first-time founders will tell those VCs, look, we just raised, like, we're just not raising right now. You know, let's chat in a few months or in a few quarters. Right.
And then the business isn't going well in a few quarters.
And the business doesn't do as well. The macro changes, that VC does two other deals, forgets about you. Versus what I have seen is multi-time founders kind of go back to that and say like, yeah, I know, like I'm not really raising, like happy to have a chat. They take the chat and then they just use it to get stupid terms and still raise that money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that position of power. Yeah, for sure. If you just raised money, and then someone comes to you and they're like, hey, I want to have a conversation. 100% I'm taking that conversation. I'm like, okay, so let's talk, because I'm not going to tell you what I would raise on again. I'm not going to tell you what the terms would be. And if you are like, dude, I will do whatever I can to get into this company and I'll basically preempt your Series A, like, why would I say no to that? So, okay, if you're in that position of power, I agree. It's probably a good idea. I changed my mind. I like it. You've converted.
Okay. And then the final tip, we kind of went through this one, but it's not, you know what? It's not as common as I think it could be, is early days, increasing the amount you're raising over time. So when you're raising that first, you think you need a million, and we're talking like mainly an angel round, maybe some pre-seed VCs, start off with 250K, get close, then raise it to 500, get close, then raise it to a million. Thoughts on that?
Absolutely love it. Would do it every time. Will do it every time. Great strategy.
Doing it right now.
Yeah, doing it currently. No, I think like it makes sense. And I think also too, like there is a part of storytelling, but I also think there's a part of genuineness to it, which is like, here's how far we can get with 250. Here's how far we can get with 500. Here's how far we can get with a million. They're all good places for the business to net out. There's all different strategies for them. You'll create different strategies around them. But once you've raised the 250, why not say, I'm going to go now raise 500. Once you've raised the 500, why not say, hey, I'm going to go raise a million. Don't let it distract you from the business, but kind of always be raising.
If you listen to this episode and the show and you like it, I have a huge favor to ask for you. Well, it's actually a really small favor, but it has huge impact. But whichever app you're listening to this episode on, take it out, go to Product Market Fit Show and leave a review, please. It's going to help. It's not just going to help me, to be clear. It's going to help other founders discover the show, because the algorithms, whether it's Spotify, whether it's Apple, whether it's any other podcast player, one of the big things they look at is frequency of reviews. It's quantity of reviews. And the reality is, if all of you listening right now left reviews, we would have thousands of reviews. So please take literally a minute, even if you're just writing like great podcast or I love this podcast, whatever it is, just write a few words. Obviously, the longer the better, the more detailed the better, but write anything, leave 5 stars, and you will be helping me, but most importantly, many other founders just like you discover the show. Thank you.